It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. This past weekend in Washington, D.C., despite breathless media coverage, a far-right protest was a bust. Counter-protesters far outnumbered the people who gathered for the one-year anniversary of Charlottesville. This weekend, the Proud Boys in Patriot Prayer are coming to Seattle. That protest is already gathering its own media momentum. But is media coverage of protests just playing into the hands of white supremacists? My next guest says yes. Brian Edwards-Tiekert is co-host of the show Upfront on KPFA in Berkeley. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
You are covering this question from a place that is, as you say, a top destination for fringe right groups. And you've come up with sort of a media checklist, advice to journalists on what to do. What's your advice?
Well, my studios are about two blocks from the park that's been hosting extreme right demonstrations since the election of Donald J. Trump. And we've had everything from like a long stretch of street fighting in that park to demonstrations that called that nobody showed up for. So the first question I think any reporter has to look at is like, is the person who's calling this demonstration serious? Or are they just trying to get in front of a bunch of TV cameras by throwing up a Facebook page?
And what's the motivation typically for getting in front of a bunch of TV cameras without being serious?
Well, a lot of these people in extreme right groups come from a trolling culture on the internet, and basically their theory of organization building, from what I can tell, is get as much attention as possible. There's no such thing as bad press. Even if 99% of the people who hear about you in a national story come away absolutely hating you, the 1% who doesn't is bigger than the constituency you already have. Maybe some of them will become followers or join your group.
Okay, yeah. So first, figure out if they're serious, figure out if they're actually organized. And you also say don't take their politics at face value. What do you mean?
Well, I think the organizer of the erstwhile demonstration in Washington, D.C., Jason Kessler, is a perfect example. You heard a 5-minute interview on NPR where he was basically quizzed about his beliefs and ideology, but not asked anything about his actions. I mean, the guy organized a demonstration in Charlottesville where a Klan member who turned out for that demonstration fired a gun at a counter-protester, where a young black man, DeAndre Harris, was beaten down gang-style in a parking garage by another group of Klan member, and where a third person who turned up for his protest plowed his car into a group of counter-protesters, killing Heather Hare. He was never asked about any of those actions or whether he felt any sense of responsibility for organizing the event where they took place. Instead, he was asked to rank the intelligence of various groups by race.
Well, what would it have served to ask to tick down those violent actions and then say, do you feel responsible? If he says, no, not at all, and goes on to say we're just defending free speech, et cetera, et cetera. What purpose would that exchange have served?
Because he can say anything he wants about what he believes, and you don't have a way to fact check him on that. But what he has actually done, there is a fact record against which to judge his rhetoric.
In the back and forth about that case, there was we heard from someone from the Anti-Defamation League who said that the interview, this NPR interview, used some degree of skepticism but not enough, and said it's not helpful to hand the microphone to someone like Kessler, who's demonstrated he's not really interested in contributing to the public conversation. But an editor at NPR said it's important for us to cover race and racism, and if you're going to do that, you have to talk to racists. What do you think?
Well, I think the question is, does he represent anybody? You know, if he represented a large constituency, if he was a player, then maybe it's worth probing what his beliefs are, where they come from, what his political formation is. But as we discovered on Sunday, the guy can barely get 20 people to a rally in Washington, D.C. Why is he worth 5 minutes of national airtime for that type of interview?
Right. Is that a useful metric to wait until a planned, announced demonstration happens and then cover it in retrospect based on how many people actually turned out?
Sure. I mean, how much advance coverage the hundreds of other demonstrations that are planned for Washington, D.C. over the course of a year gotten?
So we have, for example, in Seattle, people coming, the Patriot Prayer Group and the Proud Boys Group. What's your advice to a KUOW journalist?
Well, that's a good question. They're two different groups. Proud Boys is a group that's basically a street fighting group on the extreme right. Patriot Prayer, from my vantage point down here in the Bay Area, which is not Joey Gibson's backyard, The last two demonstrations they've called down here, they've barely been able to turn out a dozen people. And if you kind of judge Patriot Prayer based on their approach to these public demonstrations, there's something really telling that's come up at their actions in Portland, that's come up at their actions here at the Bay Area. It's a pattern we've seen repeat itself over and over. They announce a demonstration. The police make massive preparations to set up the area where they have called the demonstration for so as to keep demonstrators and counter-demonstrators separate. And then at the last minute, often the morning of, Joey Gibson announces he's changing the location to a place where the police have not made any provisions to keep him separate from counter-demonstrators. If his intention was to get into a camera-worthy physical melee with counter-demonstrators, this is exactly what he would be doing. I read him largely as a troll, someone who's attention-seeking but doesn't really represent any kind of a constituency or organization.
And do you have any evidence that media coverage of demonstrations like that help white supremacists? Besides, we could say, well, that you're giving them oxygen, you're giving them trolls the attention they want, and that leads to what?
Well, I think it's safe to say that if it's attention-seeking behavior, which is my read on it, and it didn't earn any attention, the behavior would stop.
And in fact, would you say that that public rallies have? I remember a year ago at Charlottesville, there was a lot of media coverage that suggested this is just the beginning, but I haven't seen the level of public demonstration that I expected. Am I off on that?
Yeah, well, I think this speaks to kind of our illiteracy when it comes to understanding the extreme right and the divisions within it. I spoke to A.C. Thompson, investigative journalist at ProPublica, who has been tracking the organizations that were involved in Charlottesville since the protest a year ago. And he said basically there was a huge split within that coalition right after Charlottesville because the intention of the organizers of that rally was to help mainstream some of the more extreme views on the right. And they thought they had an enormous publicity black eye because there were swastikas in the street, because there were Klan members committing acts of violence, because Heather Heyer was killed. And they split into basically three factions. One said, okay, we're not going to publicly announce public demonstrations ahead of time anymore. To the extent that we do public activities, we'll organize them among ourselves like a flash mob and show up spontaneously, take pictures, and melt away so that we don't draw counter-protests. The second group, and this is extremely troubling, are groups that have committed themselves to underground violent struggle. You have to remember that the vast majority of terrorist acts that have been committed on U.S. soil have been carried out by right-wing domestic groups, even though the majority of our resources devoted to counterterrorism efforts are aimed at Muslims and Muslim Americans. There's a group called the Atomwaffen that's been linked to 5 homicides and an attempt to bomb a nuclear power plant in Florida. We haven't had many reporters covering their activities. A.C. Thompson is one of them. I could list the others on one hand. But a provocateur calls a press event in Washington, D.C. that he's not able to turn out more than 20 people for, and they're outnumbered by the journalists and photographers who've been sent out to report on it. It seems kind of like we're missing the big story, because that's the third group, is the people who still believe in pre-announced public protests. We just discovered how big that constituency is, 24 people in the nation's capital.
So finally, Brian, between public protests, large or tiny, as you say, trolling maybe, unorganized, between that and the underground violence that you described, I'm curious your general take on how dangerous, how powerful you think the American white supremacist movement is today.
It's a good question, and I wish I knew. What I can tell you is what I think as a journalist. There is far too much firepower going into covering these trolling activities and far too little going into investigating groups like that. Because often when we see actual acts of violence committed by white supremacists, we also see that the police agencies that have the power to investigate and bring charges don't seem particularly inclined to do so unless they are pressured to by reporting on the outside. We had a neo-Nazi rally here in California's capital in Sacramento 2 years ago trying to rally support for the Donald Trump campaign. 7 counter-protesters got stabbed at that rally. There were cameras everywhere held by protesters, counter-protesters, press, and police. only one person has been charged regarding any of the stabbings. That's 2 years later.
And you conclude from that what?
That if there were more people paying attention to the actual acts of violence that are committing by extremist rights groups, trying to identify the people responsible, that law enforcement agencies might take their duty to bring about consequences for those actions more seriously.
Brian Edwards-Tiekert is co-host of the show Upfront on KPFA in Berkeley. In recent years, he's been following media coverage of the far right. Brian, thanks for this conversation.
Thanks for having me, Bill.